Welcome to Diversity Discourse, the official podcast of Minority Business Entrepreneur Magazine. This is the space where we create meaningful conversations around supplier diversity, diverse business entrepreneurship, and diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the industry's most engaging and successful entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and experts. Now, let's get started with today's episode.
Hello, I'm Tanya Isley, the publisher of MBE Magazine, and welcome to another episode of Diversity Discourse. Joining me today is Ryan Retiria, a CEO coach, diverse board director, public speaker, and the founder of Stretch 5, a leading executive coaching firm. Ryan is the author of a book called Lead Without Burnout, Growth with Less Stress for You and Your Team, which offers a proven process for achieving work-life optimization, growing your business more effectively, and enhancing well-being for you and your team. And today, Ryan and I are going to chat about his book, as well as the importance of corporate leaders and entrepreneurs avoiding burnout and how they can support their employees in avoiding burnout and other work-related mental health issues. So, Ryan, welcome to Diversity Discourse.
Thank you, Tanya, for having me on. And I'm thrilled to chat about these types of topics that will hopefully be helpful to the business leaders listening in.
Good. All right. So we'll kick it off. Just give us a synopsis of your upcoming book and tell us what led you to write it.
Sure. Well, I'll start with the second question, which is really my background in terms of I'm an executive coach and I focus on CEOs and founders and managing partners. And I basically take many years of studying and advising leaders from my time in the NBA and on Wall Street to help them optimize their growth. And thankfully, things have gone quite well in those sessions and working with those folks. But it's on a very small scale because there's only one of me and you can only reach a certain number of people. And so really, that's why I wanted to write this book, Lead Without Burnout, to be able to teach some of those techniques and to help a broader audience. And so that's really the backdrop for why I wrote the book. And in terms of the book, my core thesis is I really believe that business leaders can create more time with their family, better health, without sacrificing the aspirations they have for their businesses, and that they can also deliver that for their teammates. And so this book is about creating the culture that slashes stress across the board and helps retain top talent. Something like 80% of team members have said they would quit a job over mental health. So if you're a business owner and you don't improve your culture around mental health, you risk 8 out of every 10 of your teammates leaving for potentially a competitor and adding to your own workload until you find a replacement, and then costly turnover and sort of rinse and repeat. So that's really the book centers on that culture and how you create it.
Okay, so tell me now, how can leaders achieve that sort of work-life optimization and stronger mental and physical health?
So I think the first step is really, there's some exercises in the book, the Wheel of Life, the Values and Visions exercise, is to figure out what really matters the most to you. The problem is there's a lot of us are perfectionists and we're trying to become a 10 out of 10 in every single area of life. And it's just impossible. It's a recipe for burnout. And so it's really about going through some of the exercises to figure out of all the various categories in life, what are the 2 to 4 that matter most to me right now and over the next few years? And how do I become an 8 or 9 out of 10 in those 2 to 4 areas rather than stretching myself thin, trying to become a 10 out of 10 in every area? So that's really step one. And then step two is building that culture that attracts the top talent, that the A players that you're trying to get out there in the talent marketplace. And that really comes down to a culture that is the pinnacles are really trust, psychological safety, and a prioritization on mental health. And that allows you to track those A players. And that really leads to the third part, which is learning to trust those A players with higher level work. That will help you free up more of your time for things that will bolster your own mental health, whether it's sleep, exercise, family time, et cetera, as well as being able to spend more time on deep strategic thinking about your business. And so letting go is the key to grow. You really have to give others your checkers board in order to have more time to plan your chess moves. And that's really a core thesis of the book.
Okay. Okay. And you mentioned the A players or the top level players in the workplace. Why are they so important to radically improving your life? And like, what elements of culture help you attract them?
Sure. They're extremely important because the key to all this is being able to trust your teammates with higher level responsibilities from your plate and freeing up your time so that you can dedicate more time to your own mental health and work-life balance, as well as the areas that you're going to add the most value to your business. Really studying, researching, and thinking about what is going to drive my business's EBITDA, cash flow, returns on capital on a 3 to 5 year basis. What are the customer preference changes that are going on? What are the technological shifts that we're seeing? What markets do we want to go into? You can't really be dedicating time to those things or more work-life balance if you're constantly putting out fires, if you're deep in the weeds of every project because you can't trust the individuals that you have on your team. And so that's really the key to all of it. And I'm sorry, I forgot the second part of the question.
Second part of the question was, what elements of culture help you attract A players?
Right, right. So the first one is trust. And A players, almost anyone goes into a job interview thinking that compensation is going to be the most important driver of satisfaction. But in reality, once they're on the job, it comes down to autonomy, responsibility, ownership over work, and not having a micromanager deep in your weeds. Those are really much bigger drivers of long-term job satisfaction. And so having that culture of trust where you can trust your folks with the higher level work and delegate to them, and they're thrilled to take those responsibilities off of your plate because that really does drive longer-term job satisfaction. Secondarily, it's about psychological safety and candor. Do you have a culture where people feel comfortable speaking up even if their views go against what the boss has stated? Do they feel that they're going to be actually listened to, empathized, heard? Are they going to get screamed at when they make a mistake? Or is the boss really going to understand, well, this was just a bad outcome that was unfortunate and the process was really good? And so that candor and that psychological safety is very important. And third is on the mental health front. And yes, of course, adding benefits, expanded wellness offerings and therapy offerings and things of that nature are important. And we touch upon them in the book. But it really comes down to how you're treating people, because people's happiness is often driven by their interactions with their boss, because they see their boss more than anyone else during the day. And so are you genuinely caring about them as individuals and their career path and their development? Or are you empathizing with them when they make mistakes because you've made those mistakes in the past and you're trying to help them get past it rather than punishing them for those mistakes? And so those are a couple of the elements of really driving a more mental health friendly culture. So I think if you have trust, psychological safety, and the mental health aspects, then you're going to be able to sell a really good story in a job description and in an interview to be able to separate yourself when you're competing against other companies for that A-level talent.
That's good to know. And we talk about workplace issues because we know everybody wants A players, but then we have other workplace issues that don't involve A players, where people may be experiencing mental health challenges in the workplace. How do you address them?
Well, I think it starts with having an awareness of your team and what's going on in their lives and caring about them as individuals and being able to recognize the potential burnout, right? So, I mean, first of all, even top performers struggle with mental health issues and burnout. And so you can't really assume, well, these people are doing a great job, and so I don't have to worry about them, right? And so there's really three signs that I would look for. The first is that the quality of the work or the productivity is down, and perhaps that indicates that they're caring less about the job, that they have less focus, and they might be burnt out or going through some mental health issues. The second sign is they might have shorter or snarkier fuses and their enthusiasm might be down. And the third sign is chronic exhaustion, not just I'm tired today, but maybe somebody is really looking tired on a multi-week basis. And so I think, you know, recognizing it is really the start, and then caring about those individuals and being able to empathize with them and to be able to be there for them for whatever you need, you know, they need, without obviously crossing any sort of line. I think are really important aspects to have, to be able to retain those top players and make sure they're not burning out.
Ah, that's good. And to your point, you know, yes, I did previously make that assumption that we do have these A players, but we cannot expect them to perform at an optimal level without perhaps encountering some form of burnout. Mm-hmm. And you know, especially if we're delegating things and we don't, and one of the things you talk about in your book in terms of A players, and that is delegating things to them. And how do we ensure that the stress and burnout that we may have doesn't get shifted to them?
That is a phenomenal question. It's one of the best ones that I get often about this topic is, well, gosh, if you're just offloading everything onto the next person, aren't you just shifting the burnout downstream? And so I would say a few things. Number one is that when people receive higher level responsibilities, more autonomy, more ownership, they're more likely to be energized rather than burning out. Secondarily, yes, their plates may grow to the point at which they might experience burnout. And so that's why I have two chapters in the book. One is dedicated to productivity and the other one is dedicated to decision-making. And we waste so much time not being productive because we're not focused on the 20% that's going to drive 80% of our outcomes, or we haven't done Eisenhower matrices with our to-do list to really separate what's important and what's urgent now versus in the future. And so I walk through a lot of techniques in there, as well as we just spend a substantial amount of time putting fires out from subpar decision-making. And so there's a whole chapter in there on decision-making. And so I think that if you are able to read this book, execute these principles yourself, and then coach others in the organization right below you, then they're going to be able to coach the folks below them and so on. And everybody is going to have more time freed up, even though things are getting passed down, because you're simply going to be more productive from the productivity enhancements. And you're not going to be wasting time putting out a substantial amount of fires because the decision-making capabilities of everyone in the organization will go up significantly.
That's good stuff. Now, Ryan, without giving away everything in the book, because we want people to buy the book, okay? Yes. What are some ways that people can, especially as corporate leaders and entrepreneurs, and we have very little time, how can we optimize our time and productivity?
Right. Yeah. And I think the first thing is really doing an 80-20 analysis of your priorities. And it's been proven throughout time and various applications that really 80% of our results come from 20% of our inputs. And so that can be 80% of our profitability comes from 20% of our customers. So do we have any customers that are high maintenance, that are taking up more of our time and mental anguish, that we may be better off just pruning altogether because they're not worth what they're driving to the bottom line? It could be that 80% of our productivity is coming from 20% of our employees. And so how can we help the others that aren't producing as well? So I think also really drilling down into what are the three biggest needle moving items that are going to push my long-term EBITDA returns on capital and cash flow higher? And how do I dedicate 80%+ of my time to those items as opposed to worrying about all of these other things? And so I think really, you know, the 80-20 principle can be quite helpful. And we expand in the book using the Eisenhower matrix to allocate your priorities, understanding the urgency and the importance and things of that nature. And so I think those are pretty important. And then on the decision-making front, in the book, we talk about cognitive biases that may trip us up and ways to get around those. And one example I'll talk about, which I think is anybody can do, and that's a pre-mortem. And so what we want to do is we want to picture in the future having failed at a certain task or a certain initiative. And then we want to ask ourselves, what are the most likely reasons that we failed at this task or this initiative? And what can we do now and along the way to reduce the odds that we will fail and succumb to those reasons. And so those are the kind of things that will help your decision tree in advance and as you're going along and free up more time.
You know, that's a great concept, that pre-mortem, because everybody, well, most people usually do a post-mortem, but the pre-mortem is different because we're always told to always focus on the best outcome, right? And what we want to happen. But looking at it from that perspective, like if I fail or if it doesn't work out, you know, what led to that before it, you know, that is really good. I'm going to have to get the book. And so tell us all how we can get it.
Sure. So by the time this podcast airs, the book will have come out on January 23rd. So you can go to Amazon or any online bookseller and type in Lead Without Burnout, and you can easily access the book there. And just so that the audience knows, all book profits will be donated to mental health charities like Mindshare Partners that focuses on mental health in the workplace specifically. And if you want to learn more about me, what I do, CEO coaching, et cetera, you can go to thestretch5.com.
Okay. I was going to ask you to tell us more about Stretch 5 and what you offer and how people can get in touch with you there.
Sure. Yeah. So basically, I'm an executive coach. I specialize in founders, CEOs, managing partners, and I serve as a trusted sounding board for people in these positions that are often lonely, that maybe their significant other or therapist doesn't have the business experience to understand, and they might not want to look weak in front of their board or their investors or their teammates might be part of the problem. And so having somebody with evidence-based business experience to serve as a trusted sounding board, my clients have found very helpful. So you can learn quite a lot more by going to thestretch5.com. And
Awesome. Awesome. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. This was a very enlightening and eye-opening conversation. And Ryan also has an article in our winter issue of the magazine. So when you get it, make sure you check that out as well.
Super. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Diversity Discourse, the official podcast of Minority Business Entrepreneur Magazine. We hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to subscribe so that we can join you again. For more tips and notes from the show, check us out at mbemag.com. And to find out which guests and topics we'll be discussing next, sign up for our newsletter at mbemag.com/pulse. That's mbemag.com/pulse. We'll talk to you next time.